Headmaster. Don't worry about Richard. He'll do well in life. People like him and respect him. They follow him. Richard is a natural leader. The headmaster was accurate in his assessment of Richard. Recently, he wrote on the questionnaire he completed for me, poor student in high school and college. But he also indicated that he was rapidly approaching deca-millionaire status. He is a leader and a very successful business owner and has great enthusiasm for his vocation. He demonstrates a lot of appreciation and empathy for the needs of all his employees, who are paid significantly above the norm. In turn, Richard is well-liked by his employees. As a token of their appreciation, they all chipped in and gave Richard and his wife the gift of a European vacation. Yet Richard's life might have turned out differently. What if he'd had a different set of parents and an insensitive headmaster at the prep school he attended? What if they'd told Richard, "With these grades, you'll never amount to a hill of beans. With your academic record, you'll be lucky to get a job washing dishes or sweeping floors." Instead, Richard's parents never said such things. They never gave up on him, nor did his mentor, the headmaster. In school, Richard was a leader in sports and social activities. He was never made to feel inferior because of his lack of academic achievements. Richard is like many very successful people. He got a lot more out of the school environment than was ever noted on his report cards and transcripts. Let's take another case study demonstrating this point about leadership versus school grades. A leader of leaders. You recently completed undergraduate school and now you are contemplating pursuing a graduate degree. Before you are admitted, you must take the Graduate Record Exam, GRE. Several weeks after you take the exam, your scores arrive in the mail. You quickly open the envelope and look them over. They are not that easy to interpret, so you look at the legend. There are several parts to the GRE. Two major components are the verbal aptitude score and the quantitative score. Other parts include tests in physics, chemistry, biology, social studies, and fine arts. How do you rank? You discover that your verbal aptitude score is in the third quarter, or below average range. Naturally, you are disappointed, so you look at your other scores. Your quantitative score places you in the bottom 10%, and you are in the bottom quarter for tests in physics, chemistry, biology, social studies, and the fine arts. If these were your scores, would you still think about going to graduate school? What if you showed these scores to a team of guidance counselors or career advisors? They might advise you that you aren't graduate school material. Some might even be bold enough to tell you that you should lower your sights, which is a nice way of saying you will never amount to much. How many counselors would be likely to say to you, "Young man, you have extraordinary leadership qualities, great vision. Someday, you will change the social conscience of America. You will have more to do with social and political changes in America than anyone since FDR. I wager that you'll say zero, because most advisors judge our futures on the basis of standardized test scores. It's unfortunate that test scores, which take only one day to complete, fulfill their speculations about the next 30 or 40 years of your career. If you believe them, you will spend the rest of your life thinking and acting like someone with low aptitude. Can you imagine if Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had spent his life thinking and acting this way? The GRE scores described above were those of Martin Luther King Jr., but he never allowed naysayers to stand in his way. He understood the true meaning of achievement. There must be a balance. Certainly, we all want our children to excel in school, but at the same time, we must encourage them to do more, to take leadership roles in school. Encourage them to participate in extracurricular and team-oriented activities. If we do this, we can expect to have a greater number of leaders. We will even have a growing population of leaders with both social and analytical skills. Ignore or be inspired by critics. What do millionaires tell me about the relationship between their success and how they deal with critics? The majority either ignore their critics or use criticism as an inspiration to succeed. Most millionaires define a critic as someone who makes negative judgments and predictions about other people. Unlike mentors who focus on how others can improve themselves, critics are not interested in helping their targets improve. In fact, they seem to enjoy watching people fail. It's as if they get satisfaction from watching their predictions come true. Critics are those who have told many a millionaire, "You will never succeed. You lack the intellect to become an attorney. That's the dumbest idea for a new business I have ever heard. There's no place for women in the medical profession. There is just no hope for you ever succeeding. You are not graduate school material. Given your combined SATs of 900, you'll never succeed in college." Those who accepted such negative reviews withdrew early from the economic battlefield, while others discounted the criticism. Many millionaires actually viewed such comments as merely being theories, and they enjoyed disproving theories. The really vicious negative critics have a common trait. Their only talent is voicing negative predictions. Often they are jealous of people with real talent, people with the will to succeed. But I find that most professional critics are lacking in this same quality. They can't stand other people criticizing their views. So what do they do to ensure that they won't be criticized? They play offense. They aggressively and offensively criticize those who are or will be successful. It's one way they enhance their own status, like playing judge, jury, even God. Most self-made millionaire business owners can tell you a lot about critics. They've had their loan applications turned down repeatedly, and in their minds, loan officers are critics. They tell applicants that your business will never make it. Yet they don't offer suggestions on how to improve the business. But what great power it is to lend other people money. Consider what one self-made multimillionaire from Oklahoma once told me during a focus group interview. It was Friday morning. I had to make payroll for my employees by 4 p.m. that day. I went to the bank that I had borrowed millions from for years. They put me in a room with yet another new loan officer. This 30-something guy proceeded to tell me that my business was under review. Had to get some updates. All these years, I never missed a repay. Then he took over an hour telling me about his latest ski trips to Vail, Aspen, and Steamboat. He went on and on, while I'm there worried that I can't pay hundreds of people. Yes, he made payroll that afternoon, just barely, but needless to say, he is no longer a client of the Bank of Abuse. The Bank of Abuse also lost another member from that same focus group, a successful business owner who had